From the Fancy Lady Cowgirl headquarters, welcome to the Cowgirl Problems Podcast. This podcast is dedicated to everyone who embodies the cowgirl or cowboy spirit, regardless of what you wear or where you live. The guests on this show are a little fancy, a little ranchy, and they all have a kick-ass story to tell. I'm your host, Courtney Dehoff. Join me for the ride. Well, welcome back to the Cowgirl Problems Podcast. I know I say this every time, but it's because it's true. I'm so excited for my guest today. I started following her because she just has a real passion for agriculture, and I love powerful women in agriculture. And then throughout the last couple of years, just has had a really inspiring journey. And I'm so excited to have Brooke Taylor joining me on the podcast. You may know her as Rural Gone Urban on Instagram. Hello, Brooke.
Hi, how are you? I'm excited to be here.
Oh, I am so good. I am excited to have you. I know some of my listeners probably are very familiar with you and have been following along. But Brooke, I kind of want to just start from the beginning. I feel like I know a little bit about your story, but you were sort of raised in rural America. Am I right? Tell me a little bit about just sort of your background and I guess your upbringing.
Sure. Well, I'm originally from central Indiana, where my family's background through multiple generations is as crop farmers and dairy farmers. So my great-grandpa, once upon a time, was on the cover of Progressive Dairyman. And that's really where my agriculture, if you were to look at your FFA scrapbook, that's kind of on the history page, right? That's the foundation. In middle school, though, my two parents packed up me and my two siblings and moved us to the middle of nowhere, Oklahoma, where I saw in person my very first dirt road, because in Indiana, we don't have those. All rural roads are paved. It was wild. So I grew up in Oklahoma on a cow-calf operation, which has now evolved into a little bit different kind of a situation where my parents are a satellite facility for Transova. So lots of science is happening at the Clay Ranch in Perkins, Oklahoma. But that's where I got my start, just on the outskirts of Stillwater in a little town called Perkins, Oklahoma.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so did not know this. When I was at Oklahoma State University, which I understand is also where you graduated from, I actually lived in Perkins, not in Stillwater.
No way.
Yes.
I did not know that.
You said that. And I thought, oh my gosh, I know Perkins. So I lived right at the bottom of the hill. I don't know if it's still there. There used to be a gas station right off of, oh gosh, it's been so long. Like the main drag. And you could either take Western or you could take, what was that highway that would go into Stillwater? I lived literally right at the bottom of the hill. There was a gas station, not in, like before you got to the town of Perkins. I don't know why we're having this conversation.
Oh, Ampride?
Yes, the Ampride. Yes. I had lived with Drew and Jana Turner out there on their place and kept my horses. So what a small world. That's why I love to do podcasts, because I always learn new things. And I'm chuckling that you had never seen a dirt road. I admire Indiana for not having dirt roads, because from someone who grew up on one, they can be a bit of a nightmare.
It's so wild. So when my parents went to Oklahoma to scout the property they were going to purchase, back when the camcorders were the large VHS tapes, my mom showed us a video and she recorded the entire like turning off of the pavement onto the dirt road. And I thought it was our driveway. And I barely, like, we still joke about it. I told my mom, I was a fifth grader, and I said, I am not walking down that driveway to catch the bus. And she was like, honey, that's the road.
I love it. You're like, not today, mom. We're not playing that game.
Not doing it. Yes.
So funny. Okay, so you moved to rural Oklahoma. You end up at Oklahoma State. Talk to me a little bit about, I guess, sort of what you majored in. And then talk to me about your journey after OSU, because your handle on Instagram is Rural Gone Urban. And that's something that I really relate with, because as you know, I sort of left rural America and have lived in cities. And so I just want to hear a little bit about what your experience was like.
Absolutely. So I attended Oklahoma State and pursued an undergrad in agricultural communications. And then I stuck around because I happened to graduate in December 2008, when there was not a job in the country that you could get for you know, beg, bartering, or stealing. There were no jobs available. So I stuck around and got a master's in international agriculture, but I focused in mass communication. So in all intents and purposes, this really was a communications degree. Upon graduation, I actually, my first job out of the gate was leading marketing initiatives for the Oklahoma Pork Council. So I left rural Oklahoma and I moved to the city for the first time, which if you're from Oklahoma, we refer to Oklahoma City as the city, even though there are obviously more than one cities in the state. And there that was my first big kid job where I reported to a board and I learned, you know, here is a budget, you know, it's the first time I ever heard someone say the movable middle of communicating with consumers in a way that they trust us and they know what we're doing with their food. And of course we feed our families the same food that you can buy at the grocery store. And what I learned in that situation was everyone kept talking about the agency, you know, well, the agency said this and the agency, and honestly, I don't know why, but I'd never really considered that I could go work for an advertising agency. That seemed very HBO or maybe Sex and the City, like something fancy that someone would do. And I said, watch me. So I left and I joined an advertising agency. And that was probably the first time I ever did something that wasn't kind of by the playbook of being like the good girl from rural America who takes the job you're supposed to take. And I actually became a travel writer for 13 counties in Oklahoma called Chickasaw Country. And I covered concerts, restaurants, boutiques. Like my job was just to drive, write blog posts, and run social media. It was awesome. I loved it. I ended up winning a lot of national awards for that launching of that project. And then from there, it kind of snowballed. I, full transparency, if anyone has followed me for, you know, a minute, you'll know that I did fall in love with a tall, dark, and handsome guy who ended up being more of a lifetime instead of a Hallmark. But because of that, I found myself in Charlotte, North Carolina, living in a bigger city, working for a bigger advertising agency. And then it snowballed and all of a sudden I was in Austin, but I was working for an agricultural advertising agency that was based in Wisconsin. And then it kept going and I found myself in Nashville working for an agency based in Boston. But my client was just outside of Indianapolis and I was leading the digital initiatives on behalf of our advertising agency, excuse me, for the global rollout of all of their websites.
Oh, what a cool career. You know, when I think back to I also was an agricultural communications major. I minored in Spanish. That didn't end well. Don't speak Spanish. When I think back to all of my classes, and I don't even remember why I took it, maybe an elective, I don't remember what they were called, or, you know, one of those classes you have to check off. Of all the classes that I wish I had invested more time in or maybe pursued a little harder, my advertising class. And it was over at the JB school, so it wasn't within the AgCom department. Now, full disclosure, I got a D in that class because I missed so much class for rodeos and there were mandatory attendance quizzes. But I just was always really fascinated by that. And I think I love what you said. I didn't necessarily follow the prescribed agriculture kid, you know, path that was set out for me. I was like, you know what? You know, I can't be in advertising. Well, like, watch this. I'm going to go do it. I think that nowadays, especially, it's so important, especially for other women to hear stories like yours that let them know it's okay. It's okay to break the mold of that traditional, you know, agricultural path. It's okay to stay in that path too. It's absolutely wonderful. But I think that it's just so special to be able to hear someone like you that said, hey, like I, you know, left rural America in a sense for a while, but you still are very much involved. And I think that's what's so neat. You know, you were living in Austin and Nashville in these cities, but you were still a part of agriculture. Is that kind of fair to say?
I think it's interesting working with food production companies, whether it's on the production agriculture side or the actual food to grocery store to plate side, that all of these organizations and companies are wanting to know what the consumer is thinking. And here I am on East Nashville and really a food desert. I had to drive quite a bit a ways to find a good grocery store. And I could tell you exactly what the consumer was thinking because I was one. So I felt like an undercover agent because I grew up in rural Oklahoma and I'm living in the most urban setting you can. And I can tell you exactly where the missteps are. Like why isn't communication breaking through? It's because, you know, a lot of times in agriculture, we're saying, well, if the consumers would just know what we're doing, it's like, well, do you know what they're doing?
Have you
tried? No. So, I mean, that's been really, really fun. And I do have to go back to that advertising class. I actually took that class too. And I don't know if you remember this, but there was an exercise that the professor took where he had everyone in the class stand up and he asked questions. And what he was trying to prove was that someone who was classified as a creative, who would do the creative brainstorms or come up with the creative concepts, that they were very rare. And I was the last person standing in that class. And he knew that I was from the other side of campus. And in front of the whole class, he said, I must be cheating. I must be lying because there's no way I would be an actual creative. And now I own my own business and I am just that. I am the creative who comes up with the creative concepts and executes them.
Oh, girl, we definitely had the same professor. He was the one professor, and it was very much that way. You had the agriculture college, and then you had the rest of OS. Not maybe all the colleges, but the journalism department and the agcom department, like, you know, sort of glared at each other. And he was the one professor, and I'll never forget this, because I had the dean of the ag college write a letter for me saying, hey, like, she's not skipping class. She's a member of the college rodeo team. He informed me that rodeo was not a real sport. And if I didn't want to take his class seriously, I could, you know, get out of it. And it was too bad because I really was fascinated by that advertising side of things. You know, I felt very Mad Men-esque and I was like, ooh, this is very cool. But I love that. You know, you bring up such a wonderful point. And my whole brand was really sort of built on the fact that agriculture sort of got to the point where they didn't take me seriously because I lived in these large cities. So how could I possibly understand what was going on in agriculture? Now, you know, I grew up on a ranch. I come from that world, but I just love the point that you made. I feel like I have such a deeper understanding and just a broader perspective of the consumer from living in a city. I also lived in Nashville, by the way. We're like kindred souls. I feel like I just have such a better understanding of where the miscommunication and where the connection between the consumer and the producer is missing. So I love that you shared that story. Was there anything about, you know, going from maybe Stillwater or Perkins to your first, to the city, as you call it, was there anything about living in an urban area that really surprised you, maybe pleasantly surprised you? Was there anything about living in an urban area that you really loved? Because what I hear a lot from the rural community is, ugh, why would you ever want to live in a place like that? Well, there's a lot of great things about living in urban areas. So I'm curious to see what your experience was.
My favorite thing about urban areas is similarly to the agricultural community. When we talk about, oh, I'm a fifth generation rancher, or my family has done this since they came to the United States, you know, 200 years ago. So are urban families. Some of these small businesses have been in the family for 6 and 7 generations. So the story is very similar, but their product is different. And I think that is a huge missed opportunity for common communication, in that, hey, owning a business and ensuring that it's sustainable in the way that it can be passed on to the next generation, that is an obstacle for both sides. And it's something that we could focus on. And I love that. I love walking into a coffee shop knowing, you know, it's been around for 30, 40, 50 years. Or the butcher shop that's making its way back to East Nashville that's been missing for 20 years. But, you know, the great grandkids are following in their great grandpa's footsteps and they're reopening it. That's impressive to me. And I love that part. And then also, if I'm being completely honest, man, I love the grocery stores. I love knowing that I don't just have Walmart. I can go to any grocery store I want And if I don't find something at one store, it's probably at another. I don't have that luxury now living back in rural Oklahoma. And I miss it. And I miss it, you know?
Yes. Yes. I've gotten spoiled on the grocery store situation for sure. I can attest to that. But I think, you know, what a wonderful point, because I never really have thought of it, but you're so right. There are so many businesses in urban areas that, you know, have been deep rooted in family and the same values that we really, you know, value, for lack of a better term, in the agriculture industry. And I love that. And I think, you know, now more than ever, we really need to be supporting our, you know, small businesses in the urban and rural areas. And I love that. I think that's such a great point. You know, you've had this, you know, really cool career. You've lived all over the country. You fall in love, you move back to rural Oklahoma, and, you know, sort of, as the story goes, you have this darling little girl. And it's just, you know, from the outside looking in, you think, gosh, like, this is so awesome. And I'll never forget, I guess maybe you posted on Instagram, and I don't think I even liked or commented, because I just sat back and thought, whoa, because you handled it, at least from my perspective, in such a just really inspiring way. But I want you to talk a little bit about your story. You have this darling little girl, and on the very same day, you have an experience that, you know, quite frankly, most of us pray never happens to us and never happens to someone we know. And it changed your life. And then you, in turn, have shared the story very vulnerably and impacted, I think, more people than you probably even know. So talk a little bit about your little lady.
I would love to share the wild story that is, I like to call it transitioning back into Hallmark. And that is, I said that I lived across the country, and I did. And kind of the part that I skim over, and a lot of the people who have tapped into my story maybe don't know about, is that I moved home to Oklahoma by loading up a U-Haul in less than 2 hours and getting the heck out of Dodge and moving back to my family's ranch. Because I think there are a lot of women who can relate that sometimes the right guy is actually the wrong guy. And so I found myself living in a bunkhouse in my dad's ranch with a new business that had absolutely no clients. And that's really where I would say my story really got its start of, okay, well, I've worked for these big agencies. Now I have a business with no clients. I got my last name back. What am I going to do? And what's really fun is all of the right things happened. I fell in love with the right guy, and a guy I've known since I was in sixth grade, and we were best friends through high school. My business became successful. I had national and international clients. I spent a summer in Arizona, did all the right things. We had our baby girl, and she's perfect. I named her after my great grandmother, Elsie James Taylor. She's wonderful. And I got a cancer diagnosis on the same day. So I thought hard was packing up and moving home and starting over. Gosh, what a joke. That was like the preface to the whole novel. It was nothing. It was preparing me to live life as I know it today. And thank you for your kind words, because honestly, and when you're in the heat of it, you don't know if you're doing anything right or wrong. But I did use the experience of working with clients from an agency perspective as an account manager, saying, if I were my own client, how would I want to handle this? Because I have an opportunity here to do the hard thing where other people don't have to. I feel like I'm built tough in a way of, I can share the I call it the real. I can share the bald selfies where some other women may not be strong enough to do that. And that's okay. You don't have to be strong enough, but I can do it because I don't care. I'm not that vain. And that's kind of just the path I took of, well, I'm here, I might as well just do the dang thing. And so I did. And I shared all 7 surgeries, every single chemo session, I'm upcoming on my 1 year amputation surgery, also known as double mastectomy, but I think that that makes it sound too simple. It's an amputation. And all while continuing with a thriving business and balancing being a new mom and a new wife. And man, it's been crazy, but also kind of fun.
It is so impressive, Brooke, because even on your bad days, in fact, you know, I remember watching stories, there would be days that, you know, you were just too sick or too tired and your husband would snap a video and he would give an update on your Instagram. And it really became this wonderful, you know, in the worst way, I guess, but it was really a wonderfully inspiring story to watch. And I love what you said. You think the hardest things, you know, in your life, you know, packing up, moving home, making the big change, you know, admitting that, you know, this isn't the right man, I'm going to come home and do my thing. You look back at that now and you laugh and you think, my goodness, that was nothing. Like, look what I did and can do, because you're simultaneously raising a baby while fighting this disease. I can't even imagine, because I don't have any children, and I would imagine that, you know, raising a kiddo is probably tiring. And then here you are, you know, battling this disease. One of the things that I read on your website, on your blog, that I really loved, you sort of mentioned one of the reasons that you really wanted to be open and share about this. You said, "This is for the woman in the trenches whose late night internet searches have results fit for someone much older." And I think that just was so powerful to me, because you're young. You know, you're not necessarily the traditional, and I'm not a doctor, maybe this is way off. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't seem like the traditional candidate, I guess, for a diagnosis like this. Talk a little bit about that, because I think, I mean, it's the first thing you do, right? When you get a life-changing diagnosis or something, you go right to the internet. And I just can imagine someone else in your shoes stumbling upon your blog and just thinking, I'm going to be okay.
So the first thing absolutely you do is Google. And what you find when you know that you're not even old enough, I'm using air quotes, old enough to get a mammogram, yet you have this very scary diagnosis, you know that all of the material in the pamphlets they give you, they're not applicable to you. Because when you realize that, I'm going to go there, this is a little crazy, but this is what you learn in chemo class, which is a mandatory class you have to take before you have chemo, is you have to flush the toilet twice so that you don't harm someone else who might use the same toilet. Mm. Okay. So that means that you are physically harmful to the people who are in your house. So when your doctors kind of apply that to what it's like when you have a 2-week-old on the first day you have chemo, they're going to tell you, well, chemo is going to come out of your pores. So if you wake up and you're having a hot flash and you're sweating, you're going to need to take a shower before you can pick up your crying infant. Hmm. So now you are literally the most harmful thing to your own child. And it's the only child you have. So this is the only way I know how to have a baby. This is it. So this is my maternity leave is having chemo. It's the only way I know it. And when searching for solutions or best practices or what should I do? Like, how do I problem solve this? I couldn't find any information. And so I just started sharing it, because there has to be someone else in the same situation. Right? Like, there has to be someone else who's already done it or someone who's about to do it. And here's the crazy thing. Women just come out of the woodwork who were, I like to say I'm in pledge class 2019. I'm like, and the classes behind me, and I can name probably 20 women who had newborns and a cancer diagnosis in the past 2 years who have found me on Instagram. And all of us, like, I know that we're probably a small percentage of the overall population, but that doesn't mean that it's not important and that we're dealing with it. And gosh, it's scary, because what do you do when you have an infant? And I know people who have an infant and a cancer diagnosis and are doing chemo during a pandemic. Then what do you do?
Gosh.
Like you can't even have someone come in your house and help you. So it's just crazy. There are things that just don't make sense. And so my thought was, well, if I have to navigate it, at least I could leave a breadcrumb trail behind me that maybe someone else could find. And maybe it'll make someone else's day just a little bit easier.
Oh, absolutely. And you used the hashtag KByCancer, which I loved. And I would imagine, I probably already know the answer. I'm sure the answer to this is Elsie. But at what point did you have the wherewithal? Because I can't even imagine what is going through your brain. But was it day one? Was it day three, day five? Did it sort of happen gradually where you just thought, I'm not going to put up with this shit. I'm going to beat this. This is what we're going to do. KByCancer. I'm not playing this game with you, because I've never had to go through this. I would think it would be very easy for me personally to slip into the you just are so panicked that you have a moment and you feel sorry for yourself. And why did this happen to me? And why me? I mean, that would be, I think, the first thing I would ask myself. So at what point did you just think, no, we're not doing that. We are not doing that. We're going to beat this. This is what we're going to do. And this is how I'm going to handle it. What was the mindset like there?
So there are two very specific moments that came to mind. The first one was, I am in a very unique friend circle, and that 99% of my very close friends are also small business owners. They are consultants or own stores or whatever it is. They know what it's like to own your own business and the weight that that takes. So day two, Elsie is one day old. My friend flies in from Houston. One cut drives 4 hours from the other side of the state. We are all in my room in the hospital. And I have yet to announce to the world that this has happened. Like, I'm sitting on it. And I go straight Olivia Pope on this. Like, how do I handle this? And I'm still like, for any moms who are listening, like, I am still sitting on the puppy pad in my bed, like, and I am holding a newborn. I have no idea what's going on. And I'm like, all right, we have to handle this. So in that moment, I remember them having a conversation, like, I wasn't present. And they're like, okay, we'll put this on Brooke's website. We'll do this. We'll do this. And I remember looking at them saying, whoa, hey guys, I'm literally not dead right here. This is actually my own show. I will let you know how you can help me, but like, I'm going to tell you the positioning and the storytelling here that we're going to do, but thank you for your help. I'm not dead. And I think it took that of like almost that out of body experience to be like, oh my gosh, they're planning to handle this for me. Absolutely not. Like, I'm going to handle this myself. And that kind of like snapped me back into like present tense. And then 2 weeks in, I'm sitting in my bed with a newborn. I have my laptop on my desk and I'm trying to problem solve my full client roster. And there's a woman who is, I think, 2 or 3 years ahead of me in a cancer diagnosis, who's also a small business owner. I'd worked with her previously. I called her and is honestly like the only true meltdown I had. And I just sobbed and I said, I don't even know how to do this. How can I even keep my business running? Because we know that small businesses have a pretty big chance of not making it to 5 years. And I was in year three. And my person going to make it to year five? And how is my business going to make it to year five? And she just flat out told me, it's going to be hard, but you're going to do it. And here's how. And that was the moment that said, gosh, I'm going to have grit to do this myself, because this isn't going to be easy. And like, watch me do it.
Oh, gives me goosebumps. Let me ask you this, because you know, I think everyone listening, we've all been affected by cancer in some way. You know, we all know someone or a family mm-hmm. member or, and it's always the question for the outsider looking in. And I think your friends are a great example. We want to help so badly. And we mm-hmm. want you to know that we're there. And one of the things that my mom and I always do is we buy socks. We buy socks that say things like F off. This sucks. You know, like, I hate everyone. We're not into sympathy. It's kind of how we're wired. And so we always try to send, we send really rude shit that I'm sure, you know, the nurses at points are probably horrified. But let me ask you this, as as someone who may be listening, who has someone going through, you know, something similar, maybe something very different even than your situation, how can people be supportive? What is the best way for outsiders to just show you that we love you and show you that we have your back? Because I think sometimes, just like you said, wait a minute, ladies, like they didn't mean anything right by it. You know, they meant well because sure. they loved you, but you're like, yo, stop the train. I'm not dead. Like, let me handle this. What's the best way that people can lend to support to someone fighting a disease like this?
So if you're in the inner circle and you know someone really well, don't tell them who they are going to be. And I mean that from a very specific branding position. I'm not a billboard for cancer. Mm-hmm. So if you want to gift me something or help me do something, just take cancer out of the equation. What would you do for me anyway? What would you do for me for Christmas? What would you do on my birthday? If I had a really bad day, what would you do? Like, just kind of pretend cancer is not part of it. And whatever that is, do that. If you're trying to help someone with a small business, like, what would be helpful to you as a small business? And if you're going to offer something, be specific. That's probably the most helpful, because when you are in the trenches, your mind is going a million miles an hour. And sometimes you're just trying to figure out if you're going to be able to eat mashed potatoes for dinner because you have mouth sores. Like, your needs are just so different, right? Like, than the normal person. And so if you say things like, oh my gosh, I love you, please let me know what I can do to help, I'm probably never going to ask you to help, because I don't even know what I need. Mm. But if you said, hey, I am going to be in town on Tuesday, if you want to schedule a grocery pickup, I would love on Tuesday to pick it up for you and deliver it.
Oh, that's great. That's so great. And I think that is going to be so valuable for everyone listening, because like I said, God, this is a disease that we've all been affected by. Mm-hmm. And I love that, you know, make it specific, you know, and that really goes for a lot of things in life. You know, people, and I'm sure you're the same way, you know, people will reach out, hey, would you, you know, I'd love to get coffee and just pick your brain. I will never respond to those messages. But if you message me and say, hey, this is what I'm doing, I think you would lend a great area of expertise for XYZ. I want to get coffee for no more than 20 minutes. Coffee's on me. We're going to do it at the location that's most convenient for you. Then I might say, all right, see you there. And I think that that's just a really great example. And I'm glad that you shared that. Let me ask you this. I'm just going to ask you, are you the same Brooke? If you think, you know, 3 years ago, pre-LC, obviously, to now, obviously having a baby changes everything. And then you throw this cancer diagnosis on top of it. When you think about the old Brooke versus this current day, I guess, Brooke, what are some of the biggest changes, positive changes that you've mm-hmm. noticed? And I can sort of tell from your Instagram too, you have a really refreshing outlook on life that I think even those of us who have not been through something like this could really learn from and get value from.
I saw a meme recently that said, cancer absolutely did not make me stronger, but it did make me funnier. And I have never related to a meme more in my entire life, because the cancer process really just confirmed that I really am tough as hell. Like, I always thought maybe I would be, but I never been truly tested. And now I know for sure. I know I can, honestly, you give me something, I can do it. Mm. Because I know yeah. for sure. Like, I don't have to question it. I know, I have proof, I have receipts. I know what it's like to live that Tim McGraw song. I've literally lived like I'm dying. So I just have no need for the life clutter. I feel like I don't even see it anymore. It's like, it's not rose-colored glasses. It's just the ability for everything else that literally does not matter. It doesn't even resonate with me. I don't see it. It just goes away. And I wish that everyone could see life that way.
Mm. It's almost one of those things that I would imagine, you know, for for someone like me who hasn't been through something as, you know, traumatic, I guess is the word I would use. I think it's hard. We can do it to a certain point, but mm-hmm. I think you really have sort of had this out of body almost outlook. You've sort of got to step back and think, holy cow, you know, things as simple as I would see you, you know, just taking a walk down your driveway and you would get on Instagram and sort of make the point that don't take your walks down your driveway for granted ever again. Don't take, you know, your little small moments, changing a diaper or something so mundane. Yeah. Don't ever take that for granted. And I just, you know, by sharing and being as vulnerable as you are on Instagram, it's very eye-opening to you know, me. And I just really commend you for being open and sharing as much of your journey as you did.
I think what I wish I could give everyone is the glimpse into who shows up for you when your life is slipping away. Because in that moment, some people don't show up. There are friends who you believe are your ride or dies who completely ghost you. There are people who you thought were just acquaintances who step up to the plate so hard you can't imagine life without them. It is wild. I wish, honestly, I mean, take the chemo out of it. We should reserve chemo for terrorists only. However, the cancer experience, I wish everyone could almost just have a semester of it. Just a semester of cancer where, not actually cancer, I don't wish cancer upon anyone, just the lessons. Mm-hmm. And have a semester, have a really tough semester where, you know, you're taking 23 hours and you have two part-time jobs and you're honestly not sure who's going to pay your bursar bill and you're even going to be able to graduate, but like, you're just going to keep trekking and pretend like it's all going to work out. I wish everyone could have that semester. Mm. And I'm glad I got mine at 32 instead of 78.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because it's going to totally... I mean, you have your whole life ahead of you, and now you have this just beautiful, rare outlook on things. And, you know, you said it, you know who your friends are. You know, I think that, yeah. I think that that is just, it's super telling and goodness, what a story. It's so cool. And I encourage, I mean, it's not cool. You know what I mean? It sucked, but it was awesome that you shared about it. And, you know, your little baby, I guess, I don't know. She's not really a baby anymore. Like I see her doing things. Oh my gosh. I'm like, dang, she's growing up.
She is like a full grown adult, apparently, maybe Harvard in her future. Like she can say really big words like pineapple. And I was like, didn't I just feed you a bottle like yesterday? I don't understand. No, it's amazing. And if, you know, fancy lady cowgirl shit, like the ag industry, man, they showed up. I felt like everybody's little sister for the past 18 months. You know, I felt like everyone was like, cancer, bet. Like you've never dealt with us before. Like I felt like I had ride or die besties across the country. Man, I even had people in Australia commenting on my Instagram. I was like, wow, I've got a tribe. Like not like a tribe, like a herd, like a transcontinental herd of people. Like I've never felt love and appreciation like this ever. And I was like, wow, if you guys mess with me, I guess you mess with the whole globe. So like cancer at best, this is like going down as a tie. So like, I guess let's do the thing.
God bless agriculture. There is no group of people as incredible. And, you know, I call the agriculture community out a lot on a lot of things, but at the end of the day, I do it because I love them. If that yes. makes sense. You know,
you're like the lady with a spoon at church. You're like, I love you, but you need to stop. We're praying
yeah,
right now.
Yeah. Y'all need a whooping from time to time. And I'm not perfect, you know, either, but, yeah, man, it was very cool from just sort of an outside perspective, looking in to just see that community, man, they rally behind you. And, you know, I think there were probably a ton of people on your social media specifically who were completely silent, but who were watching. There were a lot of people who were watching your story and silently rooting for you and silently just thinking, dang, this girl is like taking no prisoners. This is so cool. It just was very inspiring, and yeah, you know, you're awesome. What's next? What's next for your business? What's any big goals? I would ask if you had any big trips coming up, but you know, that's all sort of on hiatus currently. But what's next for Brooke?
Well, I have been working with my business coach to really focus on what services do I love? What do I not love? Just like reevaluating. I feel like my word of the year is recalibrate, and I'm doing that in all facets of my life. And so I'm doing a lot of brand coaching and rent my creative brain. From an agency perspective, I was always on the new business or creative teams. And so I'm offering new services. You can literally rent an hour of my time and I will give you every creative idea that I can come up with while we're on the phone. You can just have it, do with it what you want, write a lot of notes and go forth and conquer. And, you know, I have my existing clients, but the big thing, I'm carving out time to write the book. Mm. Because if the Instagram captions were like the preview, like, man, I think I have some stuff to say.
Oh, a book. I 100% support this. You have all my Fancy Lady Cowgirl support on this. A book is one of those things, well, probably not for you. It seems very daunting for me, but you conquered the beast. So you're like, whatever, I'll write a book on my spare time. I love that. And I love that you're just like going for it. Mm-hmm. What does that look like? Do you write every day? Were you writing... Probably, maybe not during the chemo and stuff. I suppose writing was the last thing. Like you said, you were just trying to figure out if you could keep mashed potatoes down. What
I have
does
a lot of voice
like?
Memos. Yeah, I have a lot of voice memos because I had neuropathy, a really extreme form of neuropathy during chemo, which meant like I literally couldn't type some days, which was really weird. But I do have all feeling back. But for me, I have a lot of notes on my phone. I have a lot of voice memos. I do try to write once or twice a week. I'm carving out time so I can do it every day as soon as I kind of get my client roster kind of coasting for the year. But I think what's important to know is there are so many moments that never found their way to Instagram, you know? Mm-hmm. And there were these moments that I think other people, regardless of cancer, you don't need a cancer diagnosis to know that like stuff is hard and you can make it through. And I think that's kind of what I'm focusing on is, come on, just do the damn thing. Like you didn't get a choice. Like I know you didn't get drafted. Like you didn't sign up to get drafted to the war that you don't want to fight, but you're on the front line. So like, you're going to have to do it or like you're going home in a body bag. So like pick one, let's just do it. And I think that, you know, I think so many people can relate to it. We all have tough stuff.
So true. We all have the challenges, the tough stuff, the stuff that we wish didn't happen. But I think you just phrased it so beautifully. The tough stuff doesn't care. You're there in the battle, whether you want to be or not. So you might as well win. Brooke, this has been so wonderful. And I feel like we could chat forever. You are such a valuable asset to agriculture and just, you know, this community, and you're doing such great work as far as just sharing the story, sharing agriculture's story. And then of course, inspiring others with your own personal story. For those listening, if they want to hire you, if they want to do an hour session with you, or if they want to just follow you and your journey, where can people find you?
You can find me at Rural Gone Urban everywhere, even the website.
Everywhere. Keep it simple. I like that. Very good. Brooke, thank you so much for your time today, and thanks for joining the Cowgirl Problems podcast.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.